This is the butterfly meeting, and there's a couple reasons for this being the butterfly meeting. The first year, 2 years that we had conference, we had it at Callaway, and we all went to the Butterfly House at Callaway after this meeting. So we started calling it the Butterfly meeting because of that. But actually, my sponsor for many years, Ruth Fristo, who some of you knew, was at the World Service Conference the year that they voted on the symbol for Al-Anon. And the vote was between the symbol that we have now, which is a triangle with a circle in the middle of it, the butterfly, which was her vote. She told me many times she had many, many butterflies she passed on to me before she passed, and a coffee cup. So many people still think of the butterfly as Al-Anon symbol, and it really is about transformation. It's about that little chrysalis becoming a full butterfly as we bloom in this program. And that's how this meeting came to be. A lot of people asked me for that story. I want to start by just remembering several people that need prayer. And one of them was originally going to be here at this meeting, and that is Larsine. Her husband, Butch, is better, but he has been struggling with esophageal varices, and he's been in and out of the hospital several times, and so that is why she is not with us. Dave and Polly Pistol are not with us because Dave had surgery yesterday, cancer surgery, which I understand went very well, but they are not with us. And we had a member of AA coming here from Buffalo, New York. His name is Paul R. And on his way down here, he hit an 18-wheeler about 10 miles from the facility. And he is in ICU at Gwinnett Medical. And if you could keep Paul in your prayers. And Stephen T. From Tennessee, who has been a strong, strong advocate of this conference, and many of you might be here because of Stephen, is struggling with cancer. So we have many people, and I know there's others, but those are all people that are very much a part of this family. And I just want to stop as we start this meeting and have a moment of silence for them. Thank you for hearing our prayers. Amen. All right. It's great to be here with y'all at another Woodstock. And today we're going to be talking about the gifts of Al-Anon. And one of my special gifts of Al-Anon is sitting next to me. And Linda and I actually got to be friends through this Woodstock. And when my sponsor Ruth died, Linda became my sponsor. So I'm very grateful to be sitting next to her.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Linda Bazans, and I am a very, very grateful member of Al-Anon. This is fun, I think. This is, I think, the sixth time that Barbara and I have done this at this Woodstock of the South, and I enjoy it. I enjoy the process that I go through to get ready to do it. I said to Barbara this year, what do you think? What are we going to talk about? And last year we talked about acceptance, and she said, what do you like to talk about? And I said, acceptance, because I'm always dealing with it. It just never goes away. And so we sort of got together and decided the gifts of the program was a great thing for Christmas because of the gifts that we get ready to give our loved ones and the gifts that we get ready to receive. And that the program has given us so many gifts. That being said, as soon as she said the topic, I could not think of one gift from the program. It was like my brain just went totally dead. Then after that, Bob, you should have told me then. Then I went to the next phase of how could I possibly, in 30 minutes, talk about all of the incredible gifts that the program has given me. So in prayer and really meditation and preparation for this, I've gone between all the wonderful gifts and how can I possibly pin it down to a couple of things. So here goes. I had a sponsor named Marcy White, and she was from Whitney, Texas. And one year, and I'm trying to pinpoint it, but I would say it was probably 20 years ago, I went to her and I said, you know, Marcy, I said, my program's getting sort of stale. I said, I have all my books lined up on the dining room or kitchen table, and I read them every morning. But I feel like I'm losing some vitality. I'm getting complacent. And she said, well, precious, which is what she called all of us, every year I do a New Year's resolution around my program to keep it vital. And I said, well, tell me about that. And she said, well, she told me about some of the things that she had done in the past years, and this was probably, I would say, in October. And so I started thinking about it, and I wasn't coming up with much, and she said, well, how about if we do a step a month for next year? And during that month of January, all you can do is be in step one. And I said, okay, I'll do it. So January came, and I was in step one. And I'll tell you, being in step one for 1 month was really hard because, see, I wanted to go on to the hope. But in step one, it was just powerlessness and unmanageability. It was just ick. Well, anyway, to sort of fast forward, when I got to April, I realized I had to do another fourth step. And when May arrived, I'm not too bright, but I realized I would have to do another fifth step, and I reneged, and I quit. The next year, I made a deal with her that I would do it, and I did it. And I found it exciting. And so then she said to me, well, how about next time you think of something new? And so we talked about that, and I couldn't come up with anything. So one day I was talking to another one of her sponsees named Emma, and or Amelia, and we were talking about the fact that we had both lost very close friends who had just died like that. Our friend was walking with her husband along a country road, and a young adult came down and hit her, and she literally fell into her husband's arms and died. And Amelia's friend was a male, and I can't remember exactly, but it was the same kind of a passing. 1 minute here, 1 minute gone. And so Amelia and I realized we both had a New Year's resolution, and that was to stay in the moment. And every year I do a New Year's resolution, but I always include the one day at a time or stay in the moment, and then I add something else. Staying in the moment is one of the most difficult things for me to do. That particular year that I started out, it was really gangbusters until about the middle of February. And then before I knew it, it was like end of May, and I had forgotten one more time. I can't do that with great consistency. And I think it's because I'm a human being is why I can't. But when I have the intention, and that's what I hope to have every day. I don't know why I get so overwhelmed by this, because I guess it's so hard and it's so powerful. But when I have the intention, I really then live my life on purpose. And I stay in the present. And in the present, you know, the gifts of the program, the present is the gift. It's just hard for me to stay there. I get in the way of living in the present. I get in the way of that moment. But you know how when you see a little kid, let's say, that spills the milk or the water or whatever, and they go, I didn't do it on purpose. I want to live my life on purpose. And by living it on purpose, I'm really there. And I take responsibility for it. When I live my life on purpose, it decreases my worry. Because if I'm in the moment, the things that I'm worrying about are usually in the future. Well, if I'm in the moment, that moment isn't there yet. And it also increases my acceptance. Because when I'm in the moment, I'm accepting the gift that is mine. mine. I think it's just important to live our lives on purpose because we don't know. We act like we know. We all act like we know what tomorrow brings. We act like we have tomorrow. And so far, all of us have had today. But the story of that Paul who's hit by a semi, and all of a sudden he's coming here to enjoy this incredible weekend with all of us, and now he's in ICU. And I don't know how much awareness he has, but his tomorrow was totally different than what he planned on. So the present is the gift I give myself. And when I remember, it's incredible. And when I remember, I'm incredible. I am so much better when I'm not worrying about what's going to happen tomorrow. Because when I'm worried about what's going to happen tomorrow, first of all, I'm not appreciating now. And secondly, when I'm in worry and fear, I can become sort of ugly. I'm not joyous and free. I love it in the song of Fly with Abandon. I hear you in my car a lot, Sonia, so it isn't like I only hear you here. But when I hear that word fly with abandon, I always tear up because that's something I don't do easily. I don't do abandon easily. I know there's a lot of AAs in this room, and I think you do abandon a whole lot better than we do, as Al-Anons. I am serious. So abandon is a word that it literally speaks to my heart. So that's the first thing that came to my mind. If I increase my moments, I increase my acceptance. I decrease my worry. And I allow God to come into the moment. And when I'm doing the moment with God, or I'm doing anything with God, I'm doing it with so much more power, and I'm doing it with so much more joy. And it's so much easier. It's more fun. When I'm in the moment alone, I muck things up because I get into, unfortunately, control. You know, I want it my way. I want it my way, and I want you to like my way, and therefore I get my way and you're happy. That's really my favorite of all outcomes. But I can get into self-pity. And I have an incredible life, and I can get into self-pity. I have a wonderful antidote for self-pity. And it goes like this. Whatever I'm thinking that is dragging me down, I put it aside for just one moment. And I remember. It's hard for me to say this, but I'm going to say it. That I woke up this morning. You know what? And I woke up in a dry bed. And I woke up knowing where I was or where I am. And I woke up being able to choose the clothes that I put on my body. And then I could put them on. And you know what? When I get to that point of that little scenario, it's, what has it taken me, 30 seconds? I'll tell you what, self-pity has left. It has gone away. Is that a gift of the program? I used to live in worry. I was taught by a mother who worried. I know how to worry. But the gift of the program is that you taught me a better way. You gave me tools. You taught me that I don't have to do this alone. The steps are all about we. We do it all together. And then you gave me people that taught me, that went ahead of me, and you gave me people like Barbara. and Hillary and many others, they're not here, but who I walk this journey with. I don't have to do it alone. With acceptance, I think we all have a hole inside of us. And I've heard it said so well, you know, it's a God-sized hole. But until we realize that it's a God-sized hole, we're trying to fill it with other things all the time. And for many of us, it's drugs or food or sex or people or relationships or things, shopping, overeating. But the program has taught me that those things don't work. I've tried them. Uh-huh. I think we have a shopper in our midst. They can make me feel good for the moment, but the only thing that I need is a relationship with God. I had a relationship with God before I came to Al-Anon, but it was a childlike relationship. But I also came to Al-Anon when I was 21 years old. I thought I was quite the adult, but I look back on it and I wasn't. You know, I had a lot to learn. I had a lot to find out. Things don't fill the hole. Relationships, God, prayer and meditation, all the things that feed my soul are not things that I can get without some work. And the steps, are they gifts? My goodness. You know, I have a step for everything. I used to think, you know, they were just sort of, well, I actually wanted tips on how to make my husband behave. And so when I saw the steps, they didn't fit into tips that I was looking for. And therefore, I discounted them. I did a lot of discounting in my early years. But people stayed with me, and people blessed me. And I just have so many lessons, and they're all so powerful. Maybe I'm rambling too much, but one of the other ones that was an incredible get-out-of-jail-free card for me was when I was taught that when I was having distress or when I was having angst or difficulty with somebody or something, that the only thing I had to look at was whether I owed an amend or whether I needed to forgive. And when I first heard that I found that very irksome. I did not want to do either one of those things whenever I heard that, because I wanted, well, first of all, neither one of those were in my agenda of getting my own way. And first of all, I didn't want to do either one of them. So I fought that one for a long time. And I remember Marcy saying to me, I think it was Marcy, but you're not going to like the news I have for you. And that is, you either have to forgive or you have to make an amend. And I said, you're right, I don't. And when you first hear that, I don't know how it makes you feel, but it certainly wasn't a warm fuzzy for me. And yet, isn't it simple? If I'm disturbed, what do I have to look at? My own behavior. How has my own behavior affected someone else? Do I need to forgive the person for what they did? Or do I need to go to them and tell them, you know, I was wrong. I made a mistake here. I was clumsy. I maybe said something that offended you. It looks like I did, by your reaction. And I didn't mean to do that. And I hope you'll forgive me. That was not the answer I was looking for, but that is a gift. And it is such a gift that I hope I never forget it. I hope I can always remember it is that simple. But you have to open your heart to the simple answers. And when your heart opens, there's another gift. You know, it's a get-out-of-jail card. Life can be so simple if we live it today and we live it on purpose. We live it in fellowship. and we live it with the tools of the program, hand in hand with our higher power, in acceptance, in the present. I might turn it over to you. I ran out.
Hi, everyone. Again, I'm Barbara Anderson, Grateful Al-Anon, and I'm really grateful to be with y'all today. When I first talked about doing this program, I thought about, okay, I'm going to come up with the 12 gifts of Al-Anon, and I'm going to sing a song with the 12 days of Christmas. And then I thought, no, I have Sonia here, I have Hillary here, why would I need to sing a song? And I even have my beautiful opera singer Sarah here. So I decided not to do that. And even though I also had another version, I've actually written these. I mean, you know, you have the steps themselves, the 12 steps of Al-Anon. I was going to do that too. So what I've learned in the program is that I can change my mind, and I can let God speak to me and share what God wants me to share, and not what Barbara thinks she wants to share. And what came to me last night was all the little gifts along the way that have allowed me to grow to where I am today. And they weren't gifts that I saw in the moment, and some of them I wasn't even around for, but they were still important. And before I share that, though, I have been given hundreds of gifts, thousands of gifts probably over my lifetime. But I remember the one gift that somebody gave back to me. I don't know if you've ever had that happen to you, but I gave a gift to a secretary one time, and I think she had a little bit of resentment towards me that I had no idea, and she threw it at me and said, "You can't buy me with your gift." And it's funny how that's the one that I remember almost more than the ones that I have been given, that I kept, or the ones that I've given to people that they've kept. And I have, but it's a little Coca-Pelli statue on a rock, so luckily she missed when she threw it at me. But it now sits on my desk, and it helps me remember that I don't have to stay in that moment. You know, I can still stay in today and in this moment, and many things have brought me to that. The first gift, in 1939, there were some family groups that began to meet. And this has kind of started, a lot of it started with Dr. Bob's wife, Sue. She would bring the family members into the background, into her kitchen, while Dr. Bob and his buddies would meet. And Lois was doing the same thing in New York. She actually went out and got all the family members that were sitting in cars waiting for their husbands and brought them in to talk. And I'm sure to start with, they were talking about how to fix the guy in the other room. But slowly that program began to grow. And a gift that many people might not know about is the first Non-Alcoholics Anonymous group in Atlanta, and it is in the Mays history, and I forgot to look up the date. It is, I can find it and send it to you later if any of you are interested. My aunt-in-law, Martha Roberts, who was the wife of Clarence Roberts, who some of y'all from Atlanta may know who he was. He started the NABA Club and several other things. Martha started the first Non-Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And when I was a kid, I didn't realize why I liked these people so much. Whenever the family would get together, Martha and Clarence were just wonderful to me, and I didn't know they were in the program. I just had a lot of alcoholism in my family, but they were actually at family gatherings, and they were in those early phases of starting what is Al-Anon today. In 1951, Lois and Ann actually officially started Al-Anon. And it started, and Ann B., this is not Ann Smith, started that program, and were able to, Ann was helping write letters for Lois. And being at Stepping Stones, if you've ever been there, their home, there's all kinds of wonderful history there of how those early days of Al-Anon actually started at Stepping Stones in that house. And then we're going to jump way forward. Of course, I had lots of alcoholism in my family. I've spoken many times and told y'all, many of you, about that. And if not, I can do that at a later date. But a couple things that were significant to me. In 1978, I was in a church on a Sunday night. I was playing the piano in that church, and a young man came in and asked if he could make amends to the church. And I had never seen anybody make amends to the church before or since. But that man today is your founder of this conference and my husband of a little over 31 years. And I didn't know the significance of that moment, of that gift, of him coming in and doing that until many years later. Because when he asked me out back in those days, I don't even remember him asking me out. That's how much I did not live in the moment, Linda talking about that. I lived the majority of my life before I came into this fellowship in yesterday or tomorrow. And even for many years after I came into Al-Anon, I was living in the regret and the sadness and the resentment of why things didn't go the way I wanted them to go yesterday. Or I was living in the fear, anticipation, or manipulation of how I wanted things to go tomorrow. Then I missed my own life. And I did for many years in Al-Anon. It's interesting. Sometimes Dick and I'll be somewhere and he said, "You remember when we ate here in 1986 and we were sitting in that table and such a song was on the radio or whatever?" I don't remember things the way he does. But I'm getting better because I'm trying to live in the moment in my own life. In 1979, I had heard enough about Al-Anon. I went to seminary, you know, and I was a master's counseling student and music student at the time. And I had a young person in my youth group who had an alcoholic father. And I said, "Let's take you to Al-Anon." So I took him to Al-Anon in 1979. And I went to meetings with him. And I loved the meetings, and I had no idea why. I didn't really know I had alcoholism in my family. As some of y'all know in the book, how Al-Anon, well, I'm dropping the name of it, Survival to Recovery, Growing Up in an Alcoholic Home. In that book it says, adult children have an abnormal sense of reality. I had no idea that my life had been affected by alcoholism. I just didn't understand what our deal was. But I remember going to those meetings and loving them. And somebody said, "You know, there's an Alateen meeting you could take him to after we've been going a couple months." And so I took him to the Alateen meeting, and they were nice enough to let me sit in that first time. And they said, "You know, you don't need to come anymore. We'll pick him up." But those, you know, I don't talk about that time, but those 2-3 months going to Al-Anon had an impact on my life. I just wasn't really in the program yet. So fast forward, and 1983, Dick and I ran back into each other in Atlanta, and he saw me in a Macy's and said, I know you from somewhere, and I told him I didn't think anybody actually used that line, and, you know, he followed me around the mall until I gave him my phone number, though, and he called me I don't know how many times before I agreed to go out with him, and we finally started going out, and during that time, I think maybe I saw myself as a Elizabeth Bennet and him as Mr. Darcy or something. I gave him such a hard time, but anyway, I finally went out with him, and we went out the first date. We had this 4-star restaurant and a Broadway show, and then another fancy restaurant and a movie, and the third date, he took me to Johnny Mathis' concert in Chastain Park under the stars, and he had a catered dinner brought in. This was the third date, okay? And on this date, he told me that he had seen me all those years ago at that church, and he had known that I was the one for him, that we were destined to be together. And I told him I wasn't even sure that I was attracted to him. And I was actually petrified. And I'd been going out with a lot of gay guys, but that was... He told me in later years that he thinks that probably was that I didn't know what to do with a heterosexual, which was probably true. Anyway, but the next year, I called him back. I told him I thought I had made a mistake, and in 84, we started dating and later got married. Now, what he told me, in less than 2 or 3 weeks of dating, he told me that he would never marry anybody unless they were in Al-Anon. And that was his gift that had been given to him, because he grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, where AA and Al-Anon were very much together, and there were this fellowship together with AAs and Al-Anons all the time, and he knew how Al-Anon worked, and he gave me that gift. You know, I went to Al-Anon to manipulate him into marrying me, and it worked. You know, it's I didn't know I was there. I really thought Al-Anon, people in Al-Anon needed me. You know, that was my first impression, and I went to seminary after all, and I could probably counsel some of these people. And so I was going to Al-Anon for all the wrong reasons, but I tell people that because regardless of how you end up in the rooms, even if it is to manipulate somebody else to get sober and you finally realize that's not what you're going to find, or get somebody to behave, it works anyway. And so that gift of going to the rooms, even for the wrong reasons, finally started to work on me. We got married in 84, and in 85, we went to the International Convention in Montreal, Dick and I did, and we got on this plane, and there were it was one of those L-1011s. They don't even fly them anymore. I think they're all out in the sand in Arizona or something now, but there were 5 seats in the middle and 2 on the outside. So it was a huge number of people on this plane. And somebody made an announcement, was there anybody on the plane that was a friend of Bill W.? And well over half the plane raised their hand. And I could suddenly imagine what Dick might have been like when he was table hopping, because he was, you know, just kind of jumping all over the plane, talking to people. And I had never felt more alone. You know, I wasn't jumping around the plane with him. I was just kind of watching him, and he saw these people he knew on this plane, and I didn't, you know, I'd been going to the program, and I'd been trying to do the Cliff Notes version of the steps, and, you know, I was trying to be a good Al-Anon, but I didn't even really understand why I was there, truly. And we got, that night, we got to the hotel after we had visited, you know, hundreds of people on the streets. Some of y'all that just got to experience the Atlanta International may have experienced this for the first time, or maybe you've been to many internationals, I don't know. And I was still at that point, you know, sometimes new Al-Anons are kind of like this, we're not even sure we really want anybody to hug us yet, and I was kind of at that point. And so that night, we got to the hotel room, and I had tried a lot of things to manipulate him before, but I went into the room, into the bathroom, and I came out with a razor, and I said, I think I'm just going to kill myself. And I didn't get the reaction I thought I was going to get. Dick started laughing at me, and it's because it was one of those pink Bic Daisy razors, and I had been using it for about 2 weeks to shave my legs, so I really wasn't going to hurt myself with it much. But I was that hopeless, you know? And the only one of us that's ever been physical with the other is I tried to punch him in the belly because I was mad at him for laughing at me, and I just broke. And he said, honey, if there's ever a time to go to Al-Anon for you, it might be now. You're at the International Convention. Okay. So the next morning, this is such a gift. The next morning, I went to the opening session of Al-Anon's first International. At that time, was being held within the context of AA Internationals, and the opening speaker at that meeting was Lois Wilson. So when I got ready to hear the gift of Al-Anon for me, it was Lois herself that brought it to me. And I still get choked up when I think about it, because when I was ready for this fellowship, I was so blessed to have Lois bring it to me herself. And she talked about this spiritual program. She didn't say there was a spiritual side of the program. She said, this is a spiritual program. It is a transforming way of living. You never have to be the same. And by the time I left Montreal, I had finally taken the first step. Now, many of you know that my journey through the second and third step took a lot of work. I went to seminary and I graduated the year they decided they didn't want women, and there were all kinds of things involved in that, including crazy interviews where people, you know, let me know I was not wanted because of my gender, and a job I was at told they were going to have to relieve me of because I was female, and all these kind of things that had settled into God not wanting me. And I didn't know it had happened. It just started to settle into my soul. And Dick and I went through a period, his business was changing, and one of us needed to go get a real job, and as I was working for him at that time, and we had nothing. And we got to a point one week where I didn't know if we're going to have money for food. And I got down on my knees, and I asked God for help. I said I didn't really know if he was listening to me. He certainly listened to a lot of members of AA, and so I was asking him if he would help me. And 2 hours later, a friend of mine who I hadn't seen in several weeks was standing at my door with 8 bags of groceries and told me that she just had a feeling that I needed them today. And that was my transformational moment. God sent me groceries, you know. Bill Wilson had his bright light, and Moses had a burning bush, and, you know, some of y'all may have had your transformational moment. For me, it was 8 bags of groceries that caused me to believe that God loved me, and this fellowship was for me, and that I wanted to really be in the middle of it. And I already was. I was involved in Al-Anon service. I was doing all kinds of stuff to try to work myself into right believing, but it just wasn't working until this moment happened. And we're out in the country, and so many things happened for us during that time as things started to turn around. The next gift I want to talk about is in 1992, I was elected alternate delegate here in Georgia, and I had a wonderful woman named Ruth Fristo who came up and said, "Do you need a service sponsor?" And I had other sponsors before then, but I said, absolutely, and within a month, she was my sponsor as well. And I had had a number of sponsors before. I had worked through the steps, but I really didn't have that intimate relationship with a sponsor that I would call in the middle of the crisis as opposed to after it was over and tell her how it went. You know, I really learned how to use a sponsor through using Ruth. In 2004, this Woodstock started. And at the first Woodstock, I was thinking about it yesterday because Bob and Linda were back in the same truck. We were at Callaway, and going around the light show, they had a sign for you to turn your lights off, and Dick probably shouldn't have because we almost went over a bridge, and one of the wheels was hanging over, and Bob and Linda were in the back, and Dick and I were in the front, and so Dick said, "Y'all need to all slowly get out of the car," and he wasn't sure that he wasn't going over. I mean, you know, but he got all of them, all of us out, and then he managed to, and the truck didn't go over the bridge. And we were all standing out in the cold, and somehow or other, this nice little lady and her daughter picked up Linda and I, and we got in the car with them, and we left Bob and Dick to deal with this problem. But anyway, in that moment, in that gift of the moment, and this nice little family that had invited Linda and I, you know, Linda and I started talking and got to know each other, which has built the relationship that I have with my sponsor today. And so you never quite know in the moment whether those gifts that we think might be the worst might become something better than we could ever imagine. In my life, I have discovered that God takes the worst experiences that happened in my life and spins them into gold to help somebody else. And I don't always see how that's going to happen in the moment. But if I stop a minute and turn it back over to God and start looking at God's gift in this moment, I'm able to again land in that moment of today and begin to discover God's love for me. In 2005, I had one of those years that, and some of y'all have heard this story many times, I'm not going to tell you all about it, but Dick and I lost our dog, Booger Bear, in the end of 2004, and we were not able to have children, and he was 18, and he was like our kid. And we still talk about the fact we're not sure that we'll cry that much at each other's funeral, whichever one of us goes first, because we just love this dog. And my dog had been there that day that I got down on my knees and prayed that God would help us when I was hungry. If you've ever looked at the word dog in the mirror, the reflection is God, and there's just something about the unconditional love of my dog that helped me see the unconditional love that God had for me. And then shortly after that, my mom and dad died 10 days apart, and Dick was diagnosed with esophageal cancer shortly after that. We lost a home in the middle of that. He lost his ability to work for a couple years and is still struggling with getting back to his career full time because of the age that passed during that period of time when he was getting well. And I would sometimes have those doubts of what is this all about. And during that period of time, you know, I really came to understand what one day at a time was. I thought I understood before. I never really liked the slogan "one day at a time." I don't know why. I just didn't. I wanted it to be the best thing I wanted tomorrow. I didn't necessarily want to live in today. And so during this year, it was way too much for me to deal with tomorrow. I just had to learn how to live in the moment and see God's blessings in it. And during that time, I had many gifts, and they, you know, small gifts of the day, but after my dad's service, Dick and I were down in Hilton Head. We had just gone to the Hilton Head Roundup, and we had stayed over a day. I think we had dinner with Miriam and John, and the next day we were having shrimp at some little place on the water before we drove back to Atlanta. And we had a call that my mother had been found non-responsive to. And, you know, my dad had just died. And so we started traveling back, and I was in shock, and Dick was mad, and a gift. The police pulled him over for speeding, I think because God didn't want him to be mad at him. And a gift for me, we stopped at a restroom and I at a Wendy's, and I went in the Wendy's, and on the music track was "How Great Thou Art." And I've never heard a hymn in a Wendy's before or since. But, you know, I actually asked the woman in the other stall if that was really "How Great Thou Art." And she said, "Yeah, that's weird. I've never heard a hymn in a Wendy's." And we had just sung that hymn. That was the only hymn we sang at my dad's service. You know, there are gifts every day if we look for them. I mean, "How Great Thou Art" in a Wendy's, you know, some people might not see that as a miraculous gift, but I sure do. My mom died 2 days later, and Dick and I were there holding her hands and saying the Lord's Prayer, and in the middle of "Thy will be done," she died. The whole miracle process by which Dick found a place that saved him from his cancer. Actually, last night, a man with the same cancer was supposed to have spoken. His name was Larry, and some of y'all knew him. He was a wonderful man. And why Dick lived and Larry didn't, I don't know. But the cancer that Dick survived, it kills 99% of the people that have it. And he's still with us today. Actually, he's not in the room. He was checking on the guy that had the automobile accident. So it was also during that time, the day that Booger Bear died, the day that my mom died, the day that my dad died, we had moved, God's grace, we had moved out to the country, and we live on 11 acres with a 7-acre lake. Although a friend of mine the other day was trying to tell me it was a pond, because it's the definition of pond and lake, I'm not really sure. I think it's supposed to be a certain number of acres, and there's not supposed to be a certain depth and whatever. It's a pond or lake. I don't really care. But anyway, this blue heron started showing up. And the blue heron would show up at the times I needed it the most. And being part Cherokee, I had looked up what a totem of a heron was. And it's God's grace and love and peace. And it was just gave me this deep breath of love of God every time I see the heron. And this year I had a white heron for a while. I mean, I just love, every day God gives me a gift on my lake. You know, there's always something out there. Sometimes it's funny. Sometimes it's not so much. And I think I wrote a date down, but it doesn't really matter. Several years ago, a friend of mine who was hosted me when I spoke in West Virginia called me and asked me to go to the Shepherd Spinal Center and do communion with this brother. And I said, "Booth, I'm not an ordained minister." And he said, "I don't care. Go get some bread and some grape juice and go see my brother." And I am a seminary grad, so I said, "Okay, I would." And he said, "By the way, why aren't you ordained? Somebody will do it. I dare you." And so I got ordained several years ago. And I didn't know why. You know, I had no idea. I didn't do anything with it for a while. And then I got a call that I had a sponsee die. Her name was Karen. Many of y'all knew her, Karen Miracle. And the family asked me to do her funeral. And I was, you know, I almost said no. I had never really done a sermon. I was going to be the music person and work with the teenagers, you know. So, but I said yes, and the day before the funeral, I didn't know what I was supposed to do. I was looking out at my lake expecting to see the heron, and a hawk landed on the banister. And the hawk, closer to me than Bob is, and this hawk just stared at me, and I stared at the hawk, and it was for the longest time we just stared at each other. And I understand hawks don't do this, and so I don't know how long we looked at each other. I think it was like 15 minutes, staring into the eyes of this hawk. And so when the hawk flew away, I went and looked it up, you know, on the internet. It's wonderful. Miriam, it's funny you say you used to have to do a lot of study in libraries to find this kind of stuff. But, you know, I looked up, and a hawk is a gift of God, a messenger of God, encouraging us to rise over the earthly plane and see our lives from a new perspective. And so I knew I was supposed to talk about the perspective of life and death and the things that my friend Karen had accomplished. And at the same moment that the hawk visited me, her family had decided at the same time to use Wind Beneath My Wings for the service. So whether my friend Karen sent the hawk or was the hawk, I don't even know what's important about it. I think she planned her service. And from that, I did several funeral services. I officiated Tony Curry's funeral service, who was our first and second Thursday night speaker at this conference. And she was my professional mentor for many, many years. And over the last year, I have officiated over 100 weddings. You know, I don't even completely know how it happened, but I am a Assistant Justice of the Peace for my county and have done many, many weddings. Some of them were hysterical. One girl was already dilating and needed, I told her I would finish it in the emergency vehicle if we needed to. And I also was able to do the first gay marriage in my county. So just all kinds of interesting experiences that I have had since that happened. Gifts are all around us. You know, they're in our friends' faces. They're in all the hugs I got yesterday. They're in the sunset from last night. They're in the excitement of seeing my sponsor and her husband at the airport yesterday. They are in my dog's greetings for me every time I get home. They're in the miracle of this program, this transforming way of life. And I'm glad that I stuck around long enough to find them. The last thing that happened in that hawk story is after I saw the hawk that day, I saw a hawk every day for 222 days. Why that number, I don't know. I had to look it up and figure it out. But I was traveling the country at that time for business, and I saw hawks in Seattle. I saw a sea hawk in Florida. One day, driving between Pennsylvania and New Jersey, I saw 57 hawks that day, and I told God he was showing off. But, you know, what I learned during that time is that I wanted to see my life in a new perspective. I wanted to be able to live free in today. And I discovered a tremendous gift, again, of the freedom of forgiveness. Today, if I have a resentment, I can usually just tell Linda about it, and it's already dissolving before the words have left my mouth. You know, there's just something about being able to speak it and get it out, and it starts to go away. But I don't want anything to take away my power in this program, resentment, fear, anything. And this has not been the easiest year for Dick and I. We've had a lot of challenges to face. But I can tell you that whenever I stop and ask the God of my understanding into that moment, God is always there. Do you have anything else you'd like to share?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you, Barbara. One of the things that I do every year with my New Year's resolution is to pray for a sense of humor. I think you have gathered that I can take life quite seriously. And I only see turkeys in our backyard. And so I will have to look that up.
But,
I just saw some the other day and took a picture. And I have them on my iPad, but they are just turkeys. But the idea of praying for a sense of humor, because I take life very seriously. And we have three sons. I started praying for a sense of humor probably when our third son was showing signs of alcoholism or drug use. And I'm just going to share one little thing because God granted it to me. And when this happened, I remember thinking, I do have a better sense of humor. Our first son was diagnosed with alcoholism and sobered up. Our second son was same story. And when the third son started to show signs, I was just shaking my fist and this is not fair and how can it be three out of three. And he ended up going to treatment. And during the family week, or actually I think we pretty much left him in treatment and went down to Whitney. And our friends visited them. That was sort of funny in itself, wasn't it? But anyway, I went to the first meeting down there, and I was a member of the Al-Anon group in Whitney. It was like a home group to me also. And I got there, and I said, I have some good news, and I have some bad news. And my good friends that were there knew what was going on, but the rest of the group didn't. And there were probably 20, 25 people. So I said, I have some good news and I have some bad news. And I said, the bad news, excuse me, is that our youngest son is in treatment for alcoholism and drug, chemical dependency. And I said, well, actually, maybe that's the good news. Maybe I don't know what the bad news is, but I do have one other piece of good news. We have no more children. And I remember that day, that sitting there and starting to laugh. And I had not laughed for the 3 to 5 months prior to that, to my memory. So God is granting me my gifts also. That's all I have.
So, our Woodstock has begun, and in each moment, and each workshop this today and tomorrow, and each speaker, there's a gift in it for you. There's a gift in our friendship. So many of you have been very special to me in my life, and I thank you for being here today. We had the gifts of people who helped spread the word about this conference this year when the rumor got out that it had been canceled. And we're so grateful so many of you are here. Unfortunately, a lot of people made other plans. So it's a different group this year, and I'm glad to have so many of you here for your first time. At some point, we'll see how many people are actually here for their first time. But I thank y'all for being part of Woodstock for all these years, and hopefully it will continue to happen. I will ask you, though, this will be a gift you can give me, is if you We're not exactly sure where Woodstock will be next year, so don't call the hotel and assume that if they say it's not happening, that it's not. Call us. So we had hundreds of people that called the hotel and believed the hotel, and nobody ever called us. So it's just one of those interesting things. So I thank you all for being here. I ask you to look for God's miracle in today, because it is there for you. And let's close with a word of prayer. You want to go downstairs or stay up?
No, stay up there. Okay.